We only have two items to deal with, the briefing from content advisor and researcher with regard to the criminal procedure amendment bill, as well as the dangerous weapons bill, which we are going to deal with tomorrow. And the 30 minutes of time I hand over to the one who's ready, the Commissioner Allen.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, honourable members. Just wanted to give the members a brief overview of what the bill is about. The criminal procedure amendment bill basically amends one section 10C of the Criminal Procedure Act, which deals with the requirement to submit a record of the proceedings when an applicant wants to appeal against the sentence and it's done by a trial court. So I'm just taking members through a document that I prepared on this, and the main points on it is regarding the right of an accused to a fair trial and not to be deprived of freedom and to have an appeal heard speedily by a high court, And the right to have an appeal dealt with speedily is really what speaks to the heart of what the amendment bill wants to do. So what the section or the amendment wants to do is to not require that the Supreme Court of Appeal to request a recon if the appeal is against the sentence only. So there's agreement that the conviction was correct, but the appeal is only against the sentence. And then it gives the Supreme Court of Appeal discretion to ask for the record of the proceeding, if it is in the interest of justice. So what this section then does, it sets out certain criteria or circumstances under which the court can then ask for that record. And just to list, to say that the accused was represented during the trial, but for some reason he doesn't have that legal representation anymore, and there was an agreement, or there was an agreement between the accused and the prosecution, not placing the record before the court, but the court takes into account that the accused might not know whether the court would need or would require that record. And then if there's a possibility that if the record was present, there might have been a mistake made by the trial court, that if they looked at the whole record, that if the study of that record might bring forth factors that could come in the accused's favor, and then there's the prospect of success on appeal can be determined from the record. Just going to the next point was currently the requirement that the record of proceedings must be submitted when the applicant applies to the appeal court has caused some delays from the court side that experienced it, that delays caused by having to wait for the record of proceedings and the consequent injustice caused the applicant to have to wait unreasonably long for matters to be decided. There was a case that was handed down on the 31st of May, Marcus was the state where the accused appealed against the sentence, or the accused appealed against their sentences, and there was an 8-year delay in hearing that appeal. And the court confirmed the conviction and the sentence, which means that those accused will then have to start their sentence 8 years later. So this is an example of the kind of delay that is currently it can be caused by having to wait for the record to be submitted to the court. And especially affects those accused that are still in prison, because that means they have to stay in prison for all that time. And then there's a cost pertaining to that falls on the accused to pay for the cost of the record. The copy should not be made. It must be supplied to the Supreme Court of Appeal. So basically, before the committee is in the consideration, and on the one hand, has the accused who has the right to a fair trial and to have the appeal dealt with speedily, and then on the other hand, you have the administration of justice, where they say it would speed up the process if the Supreme Court of Appeal is not required to request the records or for the applicant to submit the records when appealing, but to have a discretion when to request that record. There was one submission from the Legal Resource Center that said that in their opinion, this amendment would affect the accused testamentary. And I think the question is whether the committee agrees that if the amendment would actually be to the detriment of the accused. And then there was also an opinion from the Federal Advisor's Office that said that if the amendment applies retrospectively, it would not be constitutional in fact. They don't have a problem with the amendment being applied retrospectively.
For records of the High Court specifically two cases. All of them have taken place in Upington. Those people, I have assisted them so far. It's now 6 years. This year is the 6th year. They can't appeal because there is no record. They can't go to the Supreme Appeal Court because they want that record. And I think that's what I'm trying to understand. Thank you.
Affected.
region, they listed a string of cases where the department was challenged. One of the cases that she was mistaken, I think. I'm not too sure about the date of that particular challenge yet. And then there's about four other cases where they've been taken to the Constitutional Court on the challenge yet. So it will become clear in the
very short, I'll cover it with my honorable jury. The problem here is that I heard the legal advisor say it's very expensive. Here we are dealing with a rat of a person. He said, I'm too expensive, but he wants to clear his name. Doesn't matter whether it costs so much. We must not go there, not know. It will be very expensive, some big amount of money. We mustn't go there. That one is not a good one to be mentioned. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Commissioner. Any further engagement? Honorable Matthew.
I'm saying I had some members indicating that people had to wait for 6-8 years or whatever. But the problem is when we legislate, are we not legislating for now? Yeah? Because the point is if anything is retrospective, are we opening something up when? Because where people have been trying to, or will want to do so, can do so for the last 10 years. And that's the reason of the matter is the cost effect will come into play. And then we need to be very careful. I'm just asking as to what is the situation? How do we deal? Because we're seeing the problem, do we need one treatment from now on or whatever? Because that's why we need to question. And I think member Louis is right to say, what's the rationale about the taste difference? You know? If it, you know, because if we say we legislate today, let's legislate today and say from today on out, let's move this way. Rather than going retrospective. But I'm not sure what were the reasons behind. It might be that there are cases lying on appeal in those particular courts because they want to deal with them. You know, then it might be that might be the situation. We don't know. And I'm sure that sometimes they give us a briefing and we ask them no questions, so we're able to look at those matters.
No, the idea is they just want to make a short presentation and maybe clarity will come after the presentation.
let me take the opportunity to welcome the department, and I'm not sure which one of you is going to do the presentation. And without any words, I'll send it hand over.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Ms. Rush to do the briefing. She's dealing with the bill. Chair, just to confirm, we did send some documentation to the bill, B26C of 2012, and we sent a briefing document through, as well as provision that's going to be proposed for amendment, section 316 of the Criminal Procedure Act, that is the present, so that you can see the amendment in their context. And with that, I hand over to Mr. Ross. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as a way of background, the Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill aims to amend section 316 of the Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1977. Section 316 deals with criminal appeals from High Court to the Supreme Court of Appeal. And this section deals with application for condemnation, application for leave to appeal, and further evidence in criminal proceedings in the Supreme Court of Appeal. Section 316.1A provides that an accused person convicted of an offence by a high court may apply to that high court for a writ to appeal against the conviction, a sentence, or an order that may have been imposed by that court. And in terms of Section 316.1B, an application in this regard must be made within 14 days after the passing of the sentence or the granting of an order, or within such a period as the court may, on application, have allowed. Section 316.5 provides that an application for leave to appeal may be accompanied by an application to give further evidence related to the appeal, while 316.8 provides that if the High Court refuses any of the applications referred to above, that is the application for condemnation, for further evidence or for this appeal, the accused may petition the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal to grant any of these applications. When a petition petition application is submitted to the Supreme Court of Appeal, Section 316.10 of the Criminal Procedure Act requires that the Registrar of the High Court forward to the Registrar of the Supreme Court of Appeal copies of the following documents: applications that were refused, the reasons for refusing the application, the full record of the proceedings in the High Court in respect of which the application was received. In terms of Section 316.11, the petition must be considered by three judges of the Supreme Court of Appeal, designated by the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal. In the event of the two judges differing in opinion, the petition must then be considered by the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal or by any of the other Supreme Court of Appeal judges as designated by the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal. In terms of Section 316, the judges considering the petition, considering a petition, have a discretion to call for any further information from the judge who received the application in question, or from whom the judge who presided at the trial to which the application relates. Chair, Mr. Lassa has already indicated that the provision as it is now has already been handled. which made the submission of the full record of proceedings to the High Court compulsory in all petitions. Before the 2008 amendment, Section 316(10) of the Act required that when a notice of petition was received by the High Court, the registrar of the court had to forward to the registrar of the Supreme Court of Appeal, amongst others, the record of the proceedings in the High Court in respect of which the application was refused. And, however, the registrar did not have to submit the record of proceedings of the High Court in the following conditions. If the accused was legally represented at the trial, the accused and the National Prosecuting Authority agree thereto, the prospective appeal is against sentence only, or the petition relates solely to the application for condemnation. If any of these conditions were met, then the registrar of the High Court only had to submit a copy of the judgment which would include the reasons for conviction and sentence. The Supreme Court of Appeal judges, considering the petition, had a discretion to call for further information from the High Court, including calling for the record of the proceedings should they so wish. Before the amendment, before the Judicial Matters Amendment in 2008, Section 309, subsection 4 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which deals with criminal appeals from the lower court to the High Court, provided that where leave to appeal has been refused and the appellant petitions the judge president of the High Court in question, the clerk of the Magistrate Court must submit the following record or the following documents to the Register of the High Court. The application for appeal that was refused, the legislative reasons for refusal, the record of the proceedings in the trial court. However, the proviso to this provision provided that the full record of the proceedings in the trial court need not be submitted to the petition judges if the accused was tried in the regional court and was legally represented. The accused and the director of public prosecutions agree. The appeal is against sentence only. The petition relates solely to the application for condemnation. In the Singer case, Singer versus the state, the Constitutional Court, amongst others, found Section 309(c)(4) of the Criminal Procedure Act to be unconstitutional. The Constitutional Court was of the view that the record of the case should, as a matter of course, be placed before the petition judges on the basis that an adequate reappraisal is not possible without the record. The court ordered that this exception be deleted from the Act, or specifically from Section 309(c)(4). Now, Section 316(10) of the Criminal Procedure Act regulating applications for leave to appeal from the High Court to the Supreme Court of Appeal has corresponding exceptions as those contained in Section 309(c)(4) of the Act. Therefore, the exceptions in question or in Section 309(c)(4) of the Act were deleted in the judicial matter, and when they were deleted, they were the corresponding exceptions in 316(10) of the Act were consequently also deleted. Although the Department was aware that the declaration of unconstitutionality in the case of Singer was made in respect of the provisions dealing with criminal appeals from the Legislative Court to the High Court, and that what applies in respect of that appeal process does not necessarily have to apply in respect of similar appeal process from the High Court to the Supreme Court of Appeal, due to the very strong wording that was used in the judgment, in the Singer judgment, the Department and decided to err on the side of caution, particularly because the provisions in question had been subject to a series of constitutional challenges dating back to 1996. Section 309C, 4 and 316, 316 dealing with appeals from the High Court to the Supreme Court of Appeal, were introduced into the Penal Procedure Act by Act 42 of 2003. And this was after the constitutionality of the proceedings of the provisions of the Penal Procedure Act dealing with the appeal procedure were challenged in numerous cases, such as the case of Rennes, the case of Ntuli, the case of Twala, and the same judgment. Section 316.10 dealing with appeal procedures from the High Court to the Supreme Court of Appeal was challenged recently in the case of Gringa and the others. That was in 2011 after the amendments were effected in the Judicial Methods Amendment Act. The court did not address the issue of constitutionality because this section was already amended to the current provision in the Judicial Methods Amendment Act of 2008. The amendment proposed in this bill emanates from the judges of the Supreme Court of Appeal who opposed the minister to reinstate the provision as it existed before the 2008 amendment. The judges of the Supreme Court of Appeal argued strongly that Section 316.10 of the Criminal Procedure Act in its current reading presents various challenges, including the following. The delay causing by having to wait for the record of proceedings, resulting in great injustice to the appellant who has to wait for an inordinately long time for the matter to be decided. The delay that may also result in the appellant being detained in prison or released on bail without justification for longer than necessary, with the problems inherent to these situations. The cost involved in obtaining the record, which may be completely without justification, the increased workload on Supreme Court judges, sometimes in cases where the issues in the appeal do not warrant the perusal of the entire record. For example, in cases where the appeal is against sentence only. It is argued that it does not make sense to place the entire record at the disposal of the petition judge. The salient features generally appear from the judgment in of the trial court and in the African affidavit. Statistics from the registrar confirm this fact. The period 1 January 2011 to 30th June 2011, it is reported that the Supreme Court of Appeal received 101 petitions and applications for leave to appeal in criminal cases. Of these, 18 were granted, 77 dismissed, and 5 were withdrawn. In other words, 77% of all applications for leave to appeal failed. The average time within which a record in a criminal record is filed with the Supreme Court of Appeal exceeds the 3 month period prescribed by the rule. And on average, it takes between 3 to 6 months for a record to be filed, and in many cases, it can even take up to 12 months. For such records to be filed. When considering leave to appeal, a court is concerned with the determination of the question whether there is a reasonable prospect of another court arriving at a different conclusion. More often than not, this can be determined without reference to the evidence. The judges of the Supreme Court of Appeal shall appoint out that the situation in the Supreme Court of Appeal is intolerable because of the following reasons. that petitioners are hiding up in the register of office because they cannot be disposed without the records being placed before the petition judges, even if it's clear from the record and the reasons given by the judges as to which way the matter should be decided. In addition to the cost of compiling a record, or rather in addition, the cost of compiling a record is likely to be prohibitive. A record in a criminal appeal would usually be between 3 to 8 volumes long, with the average being 5. On an approximate calculation of 300,000 per volume, which would cost the state approximately 15,000 rand per record. Over 6 months, this cost would be approximately 1.15 million, and which translates into for a year 2.25 million for a year. Furthermore, the petitioners often petition the Supreme Court of Appeal years after their matters have been concluded, sometimes because of the exclusion of time, the record cannot be traced. If a record cannot be found, the court may be obliged to uphold the appeal even if such an appeal did not have any merit. Coming now to the clauses of the bill. The clause 1 of the bill has been introduced sought to amend section 316.10 of the Act in order to make it unnecessary for the record of proceedings in the High Court to be placed before the Supreme Court of Appeal in petition proceedings if the accused was legally represented at the trial, the accused and the prosecuting authority agree, the prospective appeal is against sentence only, or the petition relates solely to the application for condemnation, in which case a copy of the judgment which includes the reason for conviction and sentence will then suffice. During the process in the portfolio committee, concerns were expressed regarding the approach to revert to the position before 2008 amendment in terms of which the full record of the trial proceedings are not as a matter of course placed before the petition judges, particularly because the Constitutional Court has held that an adequate reappraisal is not possible without the record. Following submissions by the judges of the Supreme Court of Appeal and officials of the Legal Aid of South Africa to the Portfolio Committee and deliberations in that committee, clause 1 of the bill was revised to make provision for the compulsory submission of the record of proceedings in the High Court to the Registrar of the Supreme Court of Appeal in the following circumstances. If the accused was not legally represented at the trial, or the accused is not legally represented for purposes of the petition, or the prospective appeal is not against sentence only, or if the judge is considering the petition in the interest of justice, request the record or only a portion of the record. Furthermore, clause 1 aims to amend section 316.12 of the Act in order to give judges of the Supreme Court of Appeal considering the petition any discretion to call for the submission of the record of proceedings or any relevant portion thereof. Clause 2 of the bill contains the short title and commencement, and it has been pointed out that the challenges relating to section 316.10 of the Act started since the coming into effect of section 16 of the Judicial Matters Amendment Act of 2008. And that Act came into effect on 10 September 2010. Therefore, the commencement of this bill is made retrospective to the date of commencement of section 16 of Judicial Matters Amendment Act of 2008, which is 10 September 2010. The effect of this amendment is that it will not be necessary to provide the full record of proceedings in the trial court to the petition judges when a petition is received, unless any of the circumstances stated in the proposed new section 316.10 is present. If any of the circumstances mentioned in paragraph C of 316.10 is present, the registrar of the High Court must then submit the record of proceedings in that court to the Supreme Court of Appeal judges. This means that the record of proceedings will not be provided to the petition judges in every petition. Also, the petition judges will be having an interest to call for the record or copies of the record if they are of the view that the information before them is insufficient. In order to clear to assist in clearing the backlog and saving the cost of obtaining the record of proceedings, the amendment, as already indicated, is effective from 10 September 2010, which is the date on which the Judicial Matters Amendment Act came into operation. At the beginning of January 2013, we were informed that there were 89 petition applications that were awaiting records, of which only 13 petitioners were not legally represented. The impact of this clause is that petitions that are still awaiting records of proceedings can be dealt with in terms of this bill that is in compliance with paragraph C of section 316.10. It is foreseen that this amendment will give peace of mind to applicants who are still awaiting the finalization of their application. Therefore, the retrospectivity will not cost petitioners any prejudice and instead will rather advantage them by speeding up the finalization of their petition. The retrospective effect of the provision was deliberated on at length in the Portfolio Committee. When the judges of the Supreme Court of Appeal appeared in Parliament to motivate the bill, they gave the assurance that the retrospective effect of the bill is legally sound. And the state law advisors also provided an opinion on this aspect, which is been indicated to be made available to the select committee. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, let me say thank you for the briefing by the department. We do understand. From my side, Chair, it's very clear what we want to do. It's one of the first bills that I received the briefing, and I understand the purpose of the bill immediately. And from my side, I don't have a problem with this bill. That's my honest opinion, Chair. I would just like to put this on record, Chair. I'm a front runner that apartheid has destroyed our dignity. And Chair, this bill that will assist our own people who are suffering for many, many years. People who can't afford an advocate for 25,000 rand an hour in a court. And the department has come up with something, Chair, which, and I would like to compliment them, whoever came up with this idea of going back and do this and amend it. Chair, it's a good thing for my side. I would accept it. Maybe if there are some questions for clarity, I don't have it right now. I might have in the future, but, and I would like to ask my colleagues if you have got questions, let's do it as fast as we can in 14 days. Thank you.
When one analyzes deeply, I can't be frank
writing, because here backlog were left. No, yeah, it took a much visit in order to assist the clearing of the backlog. So being caused for the zero side cutting also. Sorry, and also the cutting of the spring see something September. What is that?
Extract what that judge has actually said when they came, and I think
you deserve to have the benefit of what they said. We don't have it, but we can see what we can do.
It's good we can have all those records. I'm going to ask the department not to speak a legal language about it. Because this bill, as the briefing is here, it's so clear what they intend to do. Well, I agree we can have all those things here. But this is sometimes change. I'm not saying you must adopt this thing today. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is that any difficulty to understand this thing for us as a community. And it's the first time I'm hearing about this briefing. And it was the first time Patricia and Evan informed us, gave us a briefing. What is the purpose of this thing? My reasoning is on the poor people who are accused, which I right now know, as I just said to the people, those two brothers are sitting there for 6 years and they are not guilty because of the record that cannot be fine so that they can go to the Supreme Court of Appeal. And can you imagine how much money, and both of them are matric, one got 1 year on the University of Western Cape. Can you imagine how much money the state would pay if those guys came out not guilty and they put the case against the government? I'm mentioning one example. There's thousands of them in prison. Thousands. So all I'm saying, Chair, we can call them back for the next briefing, but I'm pleading with my colleagues. Let us not delay some, don't delay something that our people will suffer with. That's all my plea. And people might say, oh, you always like about to talk about poor, what, Chair. I'm a black child, and I know where I'm coming from. I have seen our people that suffered, and I can't allow our people to suffer further while I've got the privilege to argue on their behalf to make their life and their plight easier. That's all I'm saying.
You have made your point, David. Honorable Joe, Matila and Nelson.
Thank you very much, Chair. You know, it was a very long day. Very, very long day. And you see, I hear what Gunda is saying. But you see, Gunda must understand that from 1994, we were rushing things and not reading through the lines and passed a lot of bills that is coming back now. We are redoing it again because we were too much in a hurry. We have not read through the lines. This is 4 pages. 5 pages. What we are saying is, give us half an hour to go through this thing, Chair, and let us satisfy ourselves to say, you know, this thing is proper and not. I'm saying that very serious mistake was made 1994, from 1994 up until now. We are reversing all those things. I don't want tomorrow, to see your name is recorded in the books here, to say Gunda has said we must speak with this thing.
Gunda, listen to the veteran. The veteran is advancing. Honorable Matida and Honorable Nelson.
Not yet. I think Honorable Bloom has actually dealt with that. You see, the issue around explaining a bill and what is written in the bill are two different things. Because just a comma on a bill can mean something different. Just a comma. Then the explanation that is there on paper, on the explanatory note. Now, and that, those are the points that we want people to look at and have an understanding and say, we believe that possibly when this bill was passed, then this is where the state has been realized. How do we, if there are further issues, let's raise them so that they look at them, or let's proceed and say that the bill is ready. We want to do as Kunda said. We agree with him, but let's not rush. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just say I that our impressions are given by that fact, so that we don't interrogate money, I mean, nothing. Talk about time, too long waiting. The communities are crying out there, but prisoners are hidden, I mean, everything, we are, everything that we are doing is about their rights, I mean, long time waiting. If they have committed crime or suspected, find them out. I mean, go the process. I mean, it's a normal thing for us. But then, I'm skeptical, and something, at least it's fine, it's a button. It's very simple the way I'm seeing it now. But I'm worried about this simplicity. If the simplicity that would be nothing, we were saying they must do things must be clear. But unfortunately, as a matter of material, I say, that simplicity might cost our sons 20, 30 years down the line. Because of the cause, but we didn't take that before. I'm very worried, and I'm happy that we agree that let us go and read this thing thoroughly, interrogate and understand what is it that these things are talking about, and the amendments that are being made in this thing. You know, one day, I want to hear the department. I mean, here to us with a bill that is talking to the fundamental, that one day I raised here, the fundamental, that of undoing what apartheid did to the society, about then coming with such things, I mean, dealing with those issues, racial issues, and economic issues, I mean, they must come with such issues, are assisting transformation, maybe even this one. In fact, when these things are being presented, I think we must be shown a piece unto them that, you see, this part of this thing is assisting this transformation agenda that we are talking about. Because what I know better is transformation than these legal terms here. I don't understand them very well because I'm not a lawyer. But if you are talking about transformation, relating to the federal matter, relating to the MDP, then I will understand better. Then I will know that we are doing what we are doing. The MDP is the plan of this government. So the department, when they come and present the thing, obviously, I mean, they might not be reflecting in the bill, MDP and whatever, but they must relate to it so that they will be talking to us directly as politicians so that we know exactly that they are talking what we are talking. Because they might not understand the NDP as they speak here now about the bill. And we understand the NDP, but they understand what they're talking about, waiting too long or whatever. Who are they thinking? Why is they thinking for people waiting too long now? Why now? Why not yes, coming 2 years or maybe from 1994? Why now are they starting thinking about that? Are they thinking for the poor instead? Or because the rich is afraid that they might also have to wait too long. I mean, I'm just trying to throw these things that make us not to be sure what are the reasons and not accusing them of anything, of being suspicious of them, but of being cautious so that we don't do things that are not part and parcel of what we're doing. So it's just they must link their language with our language when they are presenting to us so that we can understand that thing.
Thank you very much, Marvin. Let me take the opportunity to thank the department who will be meeting next week to finalize and basically convey the message we need in that. Thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, we have. Just a briefing about tomorrow's meeting, and two last items, just a checking of this report, and a short briefing about tomorrow's meeting. You are listening.
Yes, you just
Sorry.
Okay, thank you very much. You're going to ask we'll do it in exactly the same way that we did the other briefing. Just prepare to pay for tomorrow. We're going to ask the teacher to go through some of the key issues that she's identified, and then I have to add some of the issues here or questions that I think members can ask tomorrow or consider on all causes of a particular goal that's being asked about you. Yeah. So she'll do that with the teacher, and then she'll just take us through some of the key issues around the
Thank you, Chair. I have prepared a document earlier on. I'm just going to go through the main points of the document relating to the Dangerous Weapons Bill. The Dangerous Weapons Bill was introduced in Parliament following a finding by the Constitutional Court that required Parliament and the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to take legislative steps to rationalise the Dangerous Weapons Act of the former Constitution, the Botswana, Venda and Tuscany. This is due to the fact that the Constitutional Court has been approached to confirm the judgment of the Tata High Court that declared the applicability of Section 4 of the Dangerous Weapons Act Constitution to be unconstitutional and required that uniform legislation had to be introduced to regulate dangerous weapons in South Africa. So the department then introduced the Dangerous Weapons Bill, and it is now before the Select Committee for consideration. And in terms of the objects of the bill, it seeks to repeal all Dangerous Weapons Acts, and not only the one applicable in the former DBD state. And it also seeks to amend the Regulation of Gatherings Act 205 of 1993 by extending the categories of dangerous weapons prohibited at gatherings. It seeks to criminalize the possession of a dangerous weapon and criminalize the intended use of dangerous weapons by setting out criteria to determine this. Now, the briefing document I prepared states that the memorandum on the object of the bill was that the High Court did not declare Section 4 of the Dangerous Weapons Act considered to be unconstitutional, but only the applicability thereof in the former Republic of Transkei. So basically, what the court pointed out was that the Dangerous Weapons Act that were in place at the time was not applied uniformly throughout, and therefore this particular ruling that the court had is that the department had to rationalize legislation regarding dangerous weapons. So the department has decided to repeal the Dangerous Weapons Act in totality and to amend it to align it with relevant legislation like the Regulation of Dangerous Act and the Firearms Control Act 60 of 2000. I think for me the issue with that potentially something that can be considered to be very wide is the definition that the bill ascribes to dangerous weapons. In the portfolio committee, the definition included a weapon that is designed to be a weapon, something that is designed to be a weapon, designed as a dangerous weapon, and this was something that the portfolio committee took up, which could potentially mean that any object could potentially be a dangerous weapon, because it is now so wide, which means something that is not designed as a dangerous weapon, but if you hit someone with it, this could injure that person severely or fatally injure it. Well, then, in terms of how the bill is phrased currently, it could potentially be a dangerous weapon. That is one thing where one of the issues that the committee has considered whether the current definition in terms of the bill is too wide, that anything could potentially. I mean, there was one of the submissions that were made to the portfolio committee concern organizations that often represent victims in domestic violence cases, say household objects, like maybe a cup issue. And the argument was that because it's a household object, but nevertheless can cause serious harm, the courts are leaning towards giving lighter sentences. Whereas if the definition was changed, that in their opinion, it would maybe have an impact on how the court sentences that person. But I think that is something that the committee has to obviously think about during the deliberations on the board. One of the things that I write about is whether the definition should perhaps include a combination of the definitions of dangerous weapon as used in the United Kingdom, United States and Australia, and should include a firearm as defined in the Firearms Control Act. One thing that is noted from the bill is that a firearm is not included in the definition of a dangerous weapon, which for me, it's not very clear why the firearm is not included in that definition. Then some of the submissions also raised the issue that maybe what the goal wants to achieve could already be covered by other legislation, like the Gatherings Act and the Firearms Control Act, and maybe it might be more appropriate to name those provisions in those acts to maybe expand the items that can be included under the list of dangerous weapons. That is one issue for the committee to consider. And then just what the goal in a way that the goal currently deals with the issue of dangerous weapons, it sort of criminalizes, it would lead to a situation where just the mere possession of an object that is not necessarily designed as a dangerous weapon could be a criminal offense. Whereas, in my view, it should be on the intention to use it to inflict harm, which should be the emphasis and not really possession. And the goal sort of sets out discretion that is given to a police officer to determine whether that person has intended to use an object as a dangerous weapon. And I think that discretion is not properly assigned to the police officer. I think that discretion should reside with the court, because the court must decide whether anyone that is arrested for any charge, whether it meets all the elements as set out in the Criminal Procedure Act for that to be regarded as an offence in terms of legislation. So the document also then just briefly highlights recent developments where the Minister of Police has appointed a task team to investigate certain irregularities in the firearms industry, where dealers are not complying with the provisions of the Firearms Control Act. And I'm asking the question whether the current measures and safeguards in place, especially around the Firearms Control Act, whether it should not be more appropriate to strengthen those existing measures in line of what is currently come out in the media, where people are buying competency certificates illegally and then obtaining firearms, where dealers are selling firearms without having the necessary licenses to do so. So there are acts in existence that need and measures in place that need to be strengthened. And that is one area that the committee has considered, whether it should not be more appropriate to strengthen those areas and amend the existing legislation to bring it in line with what the court had in mind. Also, alternatively, if the committee decides to, that the goal is a project, whether the definition or the widening of the scope of that definition of dangerous person would not lead to a situation where any object, even a telephone, would potentially be regarded as dangerous weapon, which cannot be the situation. It is the main object, but the use, the way that it is used, will determine whether and the intention of which you will be determined by the fact of the case. And I think those are basically the main issues that the committee will need to consider as well. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure all about that, but I think that's a very clear one.
provided that this paragraph shall not be an obligation on the person who is going to use the position of the object. Now, does this clause not constitute the right of the person to remain silent as provided for the Bill of Rights in the Constitution? So, these are our last questions. Again, and then you have the clause 5ABD, which amends the regulation of gathering rights, and it criminalizes the canon of dangers which have been gathering in the prison. And clause 6ABD provides the amendment of the Firearms Control Act, and places can be used to protect the firearms. And that is very, very clear that the particular amendment check, and then lastly, short cycle and a structure for operation at the basic level by the minister. So, other than that, I ask the committee, I think, before the committee is.
Honourable members, this was just for tomorrow's preparation for tomorrow's meeting. Honourable Gunda.
No change, no question, just a comment. A question of safety to the team of the security cluster, the telephone. Thank you for making our successful time for you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, last. Okay. The report on Police Service Strategic Plan and Annual Performance Plan. You have members have copies of them. The report on the annual performance plan. Honourable members, this one I'm requesting to remove it overnight and we will adopt it tomorrow.
Okay,
and then this one has to the end of the meeting. The meeting has done.